It has been 75 years since the bombing of Hiroshima. Since then, nuclear weapons have shaped the stories we tell about the future of the planet. Critic Bob Mondello has more.
A newscast just after the opening credits in On the Beach, the 1959 film version of Neville Shute's cataclysmic bestseller, ushered 50s audiences from the nuclear age into a post-nuclear age.
And our scientists disagree as to when radiation will reach Australia. The atomic war has ended, but the Prime Minister reports no proof of survival of human life anywhere except here.
The film tags along as the world's last submarine crew searches the globe for signs of humanity in a scene met by hushed silence from 50s audiences. The film surfaces in San Francisco Bay to discover a still intact but irradiated ghost town. It was the first portrait most movie patrons had seen of how the world might look without them. Shortly after leaving the port, the sub's crew asks its resident egghead, played by Fred Astaire, how he thinks the war started, and he articulates the basic scenario for scores of nuclear thrillers to come.
Somewhere, some poor bloke probably looked at a radar screen and thought he saw something. Knew that if he hesitated 1,000th of a second, his own country would be wiped off the map. So he pushed a button, and the world went crazy.
For 1959 audiences, On the Beach took place in the not-too-distant future, 1964, and that year in real life turned out to be a watershed for Cold War nuclear thrillers. An intensifying arms race and the Cuban Missile Crisis had primed audiences for alarmism, and Tinseltown provided a double whammy, warmongering generals taking over the U.S. nuclear arsenal in 7 days in May, and just weeks later, Failsafe, which fleshed out Astaire's accident scenario with frantic calls from Henry Fonda's White House to a soon-to-be-vaporized Kremlin.
Two great cities may be destroyed. Millions of innocent people killed. What do we say to them, Mr. Chairman? Accidents will happen? What do we say to the dead?
Isaac, if we are men, we must say this will not happen again.
Also released in 1964 was an acidly comic counterweight to these serious films, the one true classic the genre has produced, Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Kubrick combined the crazed general scenario and the mistake scenario to create a satire that said the unspeakable by disguising it as a joke.
Hey, what about Major Kong?
By the time Slim Pickens rode his A-bomb to that last roundup in the sky, the audience had laughed at the existential absurdity of a weapon that only lets you win through suicide. The nuclear thriller had reached maturity. Compared to a film like Dr. Strangelove, the earlier first films of the nuclear genre look pretty silly. In 1954, the U.S. government produced a chirpy little civil defense tutorial called Atomic Attack.
We're flickering there.
No, it's hardly stirring at all. Just picking up a tiny bit of radioactivity.
That's a young Walter Matthau reassuring suburban kids whose quiet family life has been rudely interrupted by the vaporizing of New York City some 50 miles away.
Oh, I have the honor to report that you are a very well-informed, 100% red-blooded American girl.
Hollywood, meanwhile, had become fascinated by reports that radiation could cause cells to mutate, a notion it took to illogical conclusions in unforgettably cheesy special effects flicks. Huge lizards, spiders, and ants began emerging from the deserts of New Mexico as scientists, who were the real villains having gotten us into this mess, very slowly put two and two together.
Tell me, in what area was the atomic bomb exploded? I mean the first one, back in 1945.
Right here in the same general area, White Sands.
1945, that's 9 years ago. Yes, genetically, it's certainly possible.
Audiences have always gravitated to these escapist films rather than serious fare like Failsafe, which may be why real-world nuclear proliferation couldn't hope to match Hollywood's version. By the early 1970s, it wasn't just governments that had atomic weapons in movies. Practically everyone Agent 007 met seemed to have enough enriched plutonium to blow up at least a small corner of the globe. Meanwhile, Mad Max was making dusty post-nuclear landscapes exciting. War Games had teen hacker Matthew Broderick matching wits with Pentagon computers. Apart from the Terminator movies, the whole notion of nuclear annihilation seemed to have receded on the big screen. In the thriller True Lies, when a mushroom cloud rose above the Florida Keys,
all right, everybody, it's showtime. Do not look at the
flag. It was being used the way fireworks usually are.
We should be safe here.
To underscore a kiss between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jamie Lee Curtis. Big bangs are what big blockbusters are all about, which has mostly left the real-world aftermath of Nuclear Weapons 2 television.
Roger, copy. This is not an exercise.
Never more effectively than in the 1980s TV drama The Day After. At a time of heightened East-West tensions, it was designed to show the effects of an all-out nuclear war, and did it ever. I remember the shock of the blast in that telecast, and then the horror a moment later of a second blast, a second mushroom cloud rising behind the characters, then a third, a possibility no duck and cover drill in my youth had ever mentioned. By film's end, nearly all the characters are dead or dying, an outcome seen by 100 million Americans on Sunday, November 20, 1983. And the day after, there was a new national dialogue about nuclear weapons, one that affected public policy. Then President Ronald Reagan wrote in his diary of being greatly depressed by the film, and after signing a nuclear nonproliferation treaty a few years later, he sent a telegram to the director saying, "Don't think your movie didn't have any part of this, because it did." None of which kept Hollywood from going its own, more escapist way. Going Reagan one better in Superman 4, the Man of Steel addressed a special session of the UN.
"I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons."
He then grabbed thousands of ICBMs in mid-launch and put them in a big Skynet, literally a net in the sky, not the Terminator Skynet, and hurled them at the sun. Good for the planet, less good for blockbustering. After all, if you get rid of the world's atomic weapons, how's Will Smith going to neutralize the alien invaders in Independence Day? And in Armageddon, the good guys needed weapons of mass destruction for the destruction of a cosmic mass, an asteroid on a collision course with Earth.
"Press the button, Stamper. Press it."
And superhero flicks would have to look elsewhere for big finishes. No Dark Knight flying an A-bomb to sea to save Gotham. No Iron Man slamming a sky portal shut with a nuke in Avengers. No Wolverine, working as he always does on a smaller scale, saving a single Japanese soldier at Nagasaki from the blast only he knew was on the way.
"It's a B-29, Bob. There's no outrunning what's coming."
Again, not responding to our own era's heightened world tensions. Still, if Hollywood isn't making new nuclear films, some harrowing old ones have recently surfaced, declassified just as they were turning to dust. Footage shot by military researchers of nuclear tests conducted between 1945 and 1962. More than 100 are available for viewing on YouTube right now. Their mushroom clouds breathtaking, the power they document unfathomable. And when you realize the point of digitizing them is to help modernize nuclear stockpiles, their power as cinema, well, not sure there's a word for that. I'm Bob Mundell.
We'll meet again.